Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, and this time I'm actually doing the review just a few hours after finishing the book. I finished listening to this audiobook this afternoon. Joining me in this discussion is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello.
And Juliana didn't read this book, she knows nothing about it except for listening to me complain about it as I went through, and she was like, oh, this is really good fun, we should do this. And I was like, well, you can join in with me. So do you have any questions yet, Juliana?
What book is it?
The book is called The Goblin Emperor, and it is by, look on goodreads.com, it is by Catherine Addison. Now, apparently, Catherine Addison, it says here on Goodreads, is a pseudonym of Sarah Monette, and they're on Twitter. But apparently Catherine is, or Sarah, they've written fantasy books before, I think. I really don't know much about this. However, this book was recommended, I've seen it recommended on Goodreads a few times, and then it came up because it's been nominated for both the Nebula Award, didn't win that one, but nominated for the Nebula Award and for the Hugo Award this year. Now, that would not normally be enough of a recommendation to actually get me to read a book. We've already been through this in depth about the Hugo award-winning books. However, I do listen to the Incomparable podcast, and on Incomparable, they were talking about the books, and some of them were saying, oh, The Annihilation is really good. That's going to be by Jeff Vandermeer, which I really enjoyed. That's going to be the winner. And other people say, oh no, Three Body Problem, which I really didn't like. But you know, I can see what people appreciate in it. And then they said, my choice is The Goblin Emperor. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll give it a go. It seems to be highly recommended. And there's other few books on there that they've recommended in the past, which I really like. So I don't always line up with the Incomparable podcast, their book club, but sometimes I do. So I thought I'll give it a go.
So is that a science fiction book?
Well, here's the thing. This is actually a fantasy book.
All right.
Although you could say it, so it's called a fantasy book, and but the world that it's set in, the Goblin Emperor, is there are elves and there are goblins. No, put it this way. It is exactly as it would be if you went, okay, imagine a world where there's no magic at all, but there are kind of emperors and kings and stuff, but there's a little bit of steampunk stuff going on there with, you know, with airships. People are flying around in zeppelins, okay? And there's some steam power, but, you know, now forget all of that, and white people are elves and black people are goblins, and now just tell a story that's set in a court. Because that's pretty much what it is. They are elves and goblins, but there is no difference between elves and goblins except they have long ears. And when they get annoyed or something, the ears go down. There's one axis of what ears can do. They can be up or down. And that's it. So it's like the person was smiling or not smiling, or they were frowning or not frowning. You know, they might as well just said that. It's like their ears were up, their ears were down, and that's
sweet.
It.
Sweet. What is a goblin?
A goblin is like in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You got the things. No, in the Hobbit, there's goblins under the mountains, are kind of goblins.
Oh, the creepy
goblins and stuff like that. But it turns out, of course, the whole, oh, the goblins are coming to eat us, it isn't a big issue, because I guess, like in Tolkien, you can breed the goblins and elves together to make Uruk-hai or something. Anyway, but it doesn't matter, because the goblins and elves are not any different from each other, except the kind of superficial, oh, you guys look scary because you're big and black skins and got red eyes, and the elves have got white faces and are slender and nice and stuff like that. Mm. So,
and the emperor that is this about? Is this about a goblin? Like a goblin who is the emperor?
Yeah, well, the thing is, he is the fourth son of an elf kingdom, elven kingdom, or empire, I guess, which has been united under this, generations ago has been united, and they thought, oh well, there's the goblin empire next door. I'll marry his daughter, you know, just for political reasons. Mm. They had sex once on their wedding night to consummate the marriage, and then they had a son. So he's like half elf, half goblin. So he becomes the goblin emperor of an elven kingdom.
Just because he is both.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't become the emperor because he's both, but that marriage led to him being both.
But he's not the one uniting it by his power by his cleverness.
His name is Maya, and he is the goblin emperor. So it starts off, and he's got three older brothers and his father. They're all, you know, his father is the emperor, and then three in line for the throne. One of them has got a son, all of them die in an accident on a zeppelin, which may or may not be an accident. But anyway, so they put the entire royal family in one zeppelin and sent it off somewhere, and it crashed. Now, first of all, I was thinking, hey, don't they ever know, like, in these kind of, like, court intrigue kind of things, do you never know, like, okay, never send the president and the vice president and the speaker of the house on one plane. They're not allowed to travel together, like, on one plane. There's Air Force One and there's Air Force Two. Actually, I don't know how Obama and Biden get around, but they don't travel together.
It's like the Queen and the Prime Minister all traveling together.
No, it's like the Queen and Prince Charles and Prince William and, what's the new one, George? Prince George. And the next one. Like, all of that line.
Yeah, but they don't really have a say.
And Prince Harry, you know, but they don't all travel together. That's the whole point. They don't all get into a dangerous plane. They just don't. And I was thinking, first of all, is this Catherine Addison, does she know about that kind of protocol of, like, the president and the vice president not traveling on the same plane? You know, again, I'm not too worried about that. That's just the setup for the story. He suddenly is called back, like, oh, your father's died and your brother's died and your other brother's died and your other brother's died.
And now you're the one in line.
And now you're the next one in line. So he turns up there and he's got this older brother who we'll call...
Now we get
Severin
to
Snape. I can't remember the name, but it's a
no,
funny name.
Severin Snape is definitely from Harry Potter.
I know, but it's something like it's a name which starts like and I can't remember the name.
By the way, this is the way that whole time you were talking to me about the names.
Yes.
How were the brothers called?
I don't know. It doesn't. The thing is, again, we'll get into that more later. But really, what it is that Maya turns up in court and he hasn't been taught anything. He's never been in court. He's only seen his father once, and that was at his mother's funeral when he was 8 years old. He's now 18 years old. Mm. He's plunged into the deep end, and he has to survive in the courtly world of the emperor's palace, which has a name. I don't remember the name. It's something called the Barflage from Marshamon. And that's it. And then he has to survive. And the rest of the book... And I'll tell you something. At the start of this book, like, for the first... quarter of this book, third of this book, I was like, this is really good.
I remember
I was really into this book. I was like, hey, this is really good fun. He's arrived there and he has to go, oh, well, I'm not quite sure what's happening, but I have to put my foot down. I have to be stern, and he has to learn stuff. He has to learn how to be his own person, and he's got to get over the prejudice of being, you know, a young, you know, half-caste, like half-elf, half-goblin kind of guy, and everyone else is purebred elf, and they're suspicious of him for different things. But his grandfather on his other side, in his goblin side, is still alive, and they're over there, and they're thinking, oh no, now the empire is going to be weak because we don't have the guy. And then about a third of the way through, there's nothing really to spoil about this book, because they even mentioned that in the Incomparable podcast when they said this, it doesn't lead up to big battles in the end. It's just sort of like a court drama, you know, the stuff that's happening in there. It's not about the, you know, big battles or other stuff. It's what's happened there. And I was like, okay, no problem. So we'll just concentrate on that. There's no problem. And then it got to this point where it's suddenly like, oh, okay, now there's the person who is going to be marrying this other person, like this other thing. Now she's not there, and then she needs to be looked at, and this one had a wife, and now their husband's dead, so we need to work out with her. Now I need to get married, and we've got to sort this out. Oh, and my mother-in-law my stepmother-in-law, now, and now her husband does, and we've got to find out something. And all the way through, like, this big section in the middle, like a whole section in the middle, was just like, okay, we've got to find places for women to be. And that could be interesting, you know. We're like, okay, well, he's got to find a new wife for himself, and he's got to find a new wife for this person, and the old wife of that person. But it was just like, women are property, and is very, very explicit in this book. Women are property, which means that they are just. It was like, you know, going, ah, okay, I have this car. Okay, I've got to get car insurance. Okay, and where do I park the car? Well, I've got to find a parking space for this car. What's the number plate of this car? The number plate of this car is X12Z53. And you go, okay, that's the identifying symbol of this car. Yes, okay, so we're just going to refer to this as X15413. And then you hear, and then they start talking about another woman, and you're like, okay, what's the reference number of this woman? Oh, this one is P12357. Oh, okay, P13257. Oh, this other one over here is called P13256. And you're like, is that the same one as before? Or do we... Oh, and now, actually, they all have different names each, and sometimes they're a countess, and sometimes... And it just got to this really boring part where I'm just like, Why are we reading about him just moving women around? Ah, where are you going to go? Well, I'm going to go over to this palace over here. Okay, that's great. And what would you like to do? Well, I don't want to do anything. Okay, you don't do anything. What would you like? Would you like to do? And it's because women are property, they don't have any agency. So it's not like, oh, I don't care. I don't like reading about women doing stuff. It's I don't like reading about people with no agency not deciding what to do in their own lives and other people just going, oh, well, I guess I'll move you over here then. Right? Okay. And the progressiveness seems to be that instead of this guy just ordering women around, literally owning them, like, oh, you don't belong over there anymore. We've signed the papers that you belong over here, but you didn't get married yet. So you belong to me, but you don't have anyone to marry. What shall I do? Shall I just stick you in a convent? Or do you want to go and work as a gardener? Or do you want to be married off somewhere else? Like that. And
they're given choices.
No, normally they wouldn't be. But now the real progressiveness of this new emperor that's coming in is that he kind of asks them their opinion before continuing to treat them like objects. And I'm just like, okay, this could be the, like, what am I, like, why am I, anyway, so that was a big section. Like, I mean, I can't remember exactly how long this audiobook is. Let me look up how long the audiobook is. But it's, you know, it's like, oh no, is it 4 minutes left? I should have just looked it up on Audible. Anyway, it's like, say it's 15 hours. That's a big, like, hour and a half of that middle of the book. Nothing else is happening. All the other stuff is stopped in the book. All he's doing is moving women around.
All right.
And you're just, right, okay.
Does he find a wife?
Okay, let me tell you how he finds a wife. He goes, I need a wife. And there's this really good-looking opera singer that he's fallen in love with. Obviously, like, oh, opera singer, oh, she's beautiful, she's got a beautiful voice. And you're like, okay, he's going to buck the trends, he's going to go against the grain, he's not going to marry someone out of political reasons, he's going to find someone who he loves, the love of his life. And this is the way he finds a wife in the book. And I'm not exaggerating here, this is the way it goes. Okay, let's make a list of all the suitable women, or all the women who could be put forward by any of the earls and the counts and the lords and all that kind of stuff. Who would they want me to marry? Okay, let's make a list. Okay, we've made this list, it's about 40 names long. Who on this list is like younger than 15? Because I don't want to wait too long, because I've got to get an heir myself. So if they're too young, if they're not 16 yet, like, I can't marry them and have children with them. So anyone younger than that, let's take them off the list. Oh, okay. Also, anyone who's like older than 40, it means they're a bit too old to have women, have babies now. Okay, anyone older than 40, take them off the list. Okay, now let's look through the list. Okay, which one of these is someone who we don't favor or isn't in favor or something? Oh, no. Okay, which one of these? And in the end, they just go, this one. On this list, let's pick this woman here. Okay, let's pick. Now bring her to court and I will marry her. And I'm like, romance.
Zero
romance. And I've never read anything quite so, like, cold and calculating. And I know what this book is about, but why is everything reduced down to... I just looked at this. We were just looking at some reviews on Goodreads, and it says, why? This is a book which is all about bureaucracy. Everything is reduced to bureaucracy. And it is. He's got this secretary, and he doesn't make any decisions himself. Maya doesn't make any decisions. He's got this secretary called Xevit. And Xevit is the one, anytime he needs anything, he's like, hey, what should I do here? And Xevit goes, well, here are your options. He's like, which one do you think I should? Oh, you should do this. Okay, I'll do that one. Another time, he's like, Xevit, I need some advice here. And he's like, oh, okay, Emperor, you do this. And all of the time, everything is reduced down to, let me talk to my secretary, and my secretary will help me out and tell me what I need to know and tell me, oh, do we have this monastery of it? Yes, do we? Okay, you, which, yes, okay, thank you. And now I'll make a decision. And there's at one point in the book where he says, let me bring up, I think I made some notes here. He keeps saying, I don't have any power except to tell other people to do things for me. And I'm just like, so why are we following your story? And that constantly came back to that. You know, I've only talked about what's happened in the first part of this book, but the second part of the book continues on. It's like, oh, okay, and now we need to do this thing. Okay, let's get everyone together. Let's have a meeting. Let's talk to Xevit, my secretary. Let's bring in this counter. Let's bring in this earl and this lord, and we'll bring them together in these different levels of the politics system, and we'll go into this other palace, and we'll talk about this and talk. And it's just like, this is really boring. Like, all of the interesting stuff is not happening with the emperor. Like, okay, was it an accident that his father's airship blew up? Do you think it was an accident?
Probably.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't an accident. Well, it might have been an accident, but then it wasn't an accident, but it could have been. Anyway, so it turns out they find a device, a bomb. This is right at the beginning of the book. They find a bomb.
Not surprising.
And then you think, oh, this could be really interesting. He's going to get to the bottom of it. No, he doesn't. He says, hey, you person there, you get to the bottom of it, and this person goes, okay. And then that person just disappears. They just disappear, like, for most of the rest of the book. And then a few chapters before the end, he sends in this letter saying, I will now recount my adventures that I've had in this other city. I'm like, this could have been a really interesting story. Like, this person here is doing some interesting stuff. Why aren't we following, like, the investigation into the death? Like, wouldn't that be the most important thing? Like, okay, the emperor and his three sons, his three closest heirs, or his three next in line to the throne, have all died in a sabotage attack. Let's read that story.
Yeah, like, I just wanted to say that would be something I would read.
Yeah, about the investigation and how we got to the bottom of it. And when we actually do, it's sort of like a few paragraphs, or literally gets this letter and reads this letter. And I'm like, that whole story there is more interesting than anything that's happened after the first quarter, third of this book. You know,
right.
It really is. And then we get this other thing where, like, there's another attempt on his life. Well, not so much an attempt on his life, not an assassination attempt, but, like, his, you know, again, no spoilers, but people try and make him abdicate and kidnap him and do a bit of stuff like that. And you think, oh, okay, actually, those people's stories of what they're going through and from their point of view is more interesting than him, because all of that happened in the background and then it just happened to him and he was then, like, rescued. Well, it was not so much rescued. It was kind of interesting, some of the stuff that was set up before. You just go, oh, okay, that's played out in that way. And you go, okay, why? And then they're just taken off the scene and that's forgotten about. And then we go on to something else and there's all these disconnected things. And then in the end, when they do get to the bottom of all of these things, you know, when they get that letter and they said, this is the person who was behind it. And I was like, great, that was the only remaining mystery in this whole thing. And I picked up and went into the Audible app. And I was just like, how is there still 3 hours to go? Like, we have discovered, we have got to the root of all of it. And then it's like, ah, but now they've got to go, he's got to have his birthday and there's got to be the midwinter festival. And then we read a lot about him getting dressed and then we read about what they're eating. And then there's dancing and there's all the dancing. He never learned how to dance. So he's always watching people dancing. Like, a good quarter of this book seems to feel like him just watching other people dance and him not joining in and them going, why can't you dance? Oh, I never learned how to dance. And I'm like, well, why don't you just learn it? Why don't you ask people, hey, can anyone teach me how to dance? That would be really
handy.
He's
an emperor.
He's an emperor. And then, like, in the next party, hey, why aren't you dancing? Oh, nobody's taught me how to dance. And you're like, oh, okay, come on. And then the next party, hey, why aren't you dancing? Oh, nobody taught me how to dance. I was just like, fucking someone just tell him how to dance. And in the end, his wife is like, arranged marriage that he's having. She's like, oh, I'll teach you how to dance. And he's like, oh, will you? And she's like, yeah, okay. And you're like, oh.
What happened to the opera singer?
Just disappeared. But just, she was there and she was like, oh. And it was, again, there was this kind of frisson of sexual tension. And then it's just removed from the book. And she's just dropped, like, halfway through the book. She's used to kind of set up, there's this bridge building project that they want to do, a little bit more steampunky swing drawbridge across the river kind of thing. And again, that, technically that doesn't make sense to me because, anyway, I don't want to get into like the geography and, you know, bridge building technology, but building bridges across things, like if you have to wait till the steam age to build a bridge across something, like you're doing your world building wrong. But again, I don't want to get into that. But yeah, she's used to introduce this bridge building thing and then she just disappears. And then like at the end of the book, she comes forward and goes, anyway, so what happens at the end of the book is just nothing. Like just ages. And then after everyone and the people are in jail, the bad guys are in jail, everything's there. And I'm looking, and I said to this you before, I'm like, there's still an hour and a half of this audiobook still to go. And I'm like, why? What can possibly happen? There are no more twists. Yeah, like every single thing.
I was then thinking of maybe later in that time there was a big twist. No,
there was no twist to have. I mean, the thing is, what when you're expecting a twist, there has to be something in which you go, ah, something's not quite right here. Something's not quite right here. You know, there has to be there's something not quite right here. So when the twist happens, you go, oh, that explains all those weird feelings in my head. You know, the all uncomfortable.
No
stuff.
No weird feeling.
There's nothing weird in this book. There's no magic in this book. I mean, the only magic is like. You know, like I said, oh, and there's airships, but now forget the airships because it doesn't matter. There's magic, but just forget the magic. It doesn't matter. Like, so one person has some dreams once and that's it. And that's the only way that magic impacts this whole story at all. You know, and I don't mind that with fantasy. For example, like in the Game of Thrones, I read the first book and I was pretty good of the Game of Thrones book. And there's very little magic. There's like references, but the magic is there. Like, oh, there's some white walkers in the north, like white zombies in the north. Mm-hmm. And then there's some dragons over here. And then there's one guy who's got this magic flaming sword. And you're like, oh, okay, so there is some magic. But, you know, it kind of feels built into the world. Whereas here, if you just said, okay, there were no airships. They just had an accident in a horse carriage. The horse carriage fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, and the emperor died. And there's no magic at all. you know, someone
it
just
it would just
thought,
be historical fiction.
It would just, yeah, like alternate history historical fiction.
Yeah. Like a story set in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, and again, if the elves and goblins were just like Englishmen and Frenchmen or something like that, or you know, because the skin color comes into it, you know, sort of like an emperor here in this part of the world of white people, or maybe a sort of like, an emperor down in South America, an emperor in North America, you know, kind of that kind of difference between...
But this is always the deal. What I don't understand in so-called fantasy is when they always set it up the same way.
What do you
it's
mean?
It's always a kingdom. It's always like monarchy stuff.
Okay, and then brings me normally where in these things I end up talking about like the themes of the book and what is in the book and why, you know, why do you read this? Like what ideas are in this book? Now, fantasy isn't always about ideas in the way that science fiction can be. But I always want to kind of bring out the themes, the politics, the what, you know, the considerations that go into it, like what this makes you think about. But it's weird. Like I'm just reading this. We tried to get through the Paladin
Curse of
Skull.
Chaelion.
Yeah, Curse of Chaelion by Lewis McMaster Bujold. And in there, we were like, why are we reading? And that started off pretty good. We're like, oh, this guy, he doesn't have any money, and then he finds this stuff, and there's some curse on it, but he has to pretend to be someone else.
It could have been really
great. And then he turns up in the palace and just goes, oh, actually, I'm a former knight. Your father knew me here, and I used to work here. And they're like, oh, great, you now get a job, and by the end of it, you just get a title. And, you know, and in a way, I'm just like, oh, okay, that's so comfortable that you just go, oh, I'm just going to... And again, I don't want to get onto too many social justice progress, you know, progressive politics and stuff. But you understand why this book is just like, and these kind of books, it's just like, oh, okay, who is the most, like, who is the biggest wish fulfillment character? It is the emperor. Okay, let's concentrate on the emperor. And nothing about this is... nothing about his struggle is interesting. It's all really trivial. At one point, he's like, oh, I'm not sure I want to be emperor. And I was like, I don't care if you're emperor or not. Like, somebody else could be emperor. And even at a time when they're like, hey, you must abdicate and, you know, your nephew, he should be emperor. And he's like, oh, maybe that's right. I was like, yeah. And there are glimpses in this, but it's set in a world which is so, like, so pleasantly nice that... It, you know, for the most part, you know.
For him.
Mm. We see everything in the world through the most pleasantly nice point of view.
Right.
We never see any of the world through the point of view of the people who are struggling. Now, as the book goes on, you realize, there is this kind of, like, way where they go, oh, some workers over here in these factories are dying because there's too much. And they're like, oh, is that okay? Oh, and the women are just treated as property, but they're not really... And it's like this really passive kind of way that they're like, oh, and it's great that you're the new progressive emperor and you're going to make changes. But I'm like, oh, that's like saying the Pope at the moment is really progressive because, you know, and do you understand the same kind of thing? It's like that, like partially you just go, oh, yeah, it's great that this Pope is so progressive. And yet he is making the Vatican is doing press releases saying, oh, nobody should do business with these companies because they treat gay people properly. Yeah. And, you know, it's that kind of thing. I was reading this just going, and I made a note here. Was it on my computer here? I said a note of comfortable non-progressive non-conservatism. In other words, like the point of view of the main character is so much of a void for you to fill in for yourself that there isn't anything there. For example, there's a few points when it came up really, really clearly that at one point he gets a new bodyguard and he's saying, this is your new bodyguard. And it says, and I looked at his, and Maya looked at his face and then went down and was then, oh, I couldn't. And then he spoke, the new bodyguard spoke in a voice which was too, and it's a woman bodyguard. And then it's all these things, oh, it's a woman bodyguard. Oh, you can't have a woman. And you hear a lot of the things about, but what will people say if you have a bodyguard in there and it's a woman? And he's like, well, it shouldn't be, is it a problem? I'll just do it. Yeah, like that. And then the rest of it has like him having a woman bodyguard, no impact on the rest of the story at all. It's just like,
so it's like she's avoiding all the politicalness come across.
It's like saying that, hey, what do you? It's like bring up this question. Hey, in this world where literally women are property, and whole sections of the book is them just being moved around, like, oh, we got to park a car. Where do we park the car? Oh, it's just over here. Oh, we got these women that we got to do. Oh, fucking hell, women. What do we do with them? Like that kind of stuff. And then, oh, and this person who's pulled herself up by her bootstraps and she's learned how to do all of this and she's going to be your new protecting kind of thing. Oh, that's another way. There was a little bit of protective spell magic as well. Not to do it disservice, there was a little bit more magic that I forgot about. But this woman is brought in, and it's like, oh, and this thing here. But Maya has no positive reaction or negative reaction in a way that, like I was saying, it's like, it's not a conservative position, but it's like not a progressive position politically in this fantasy. It's like saying, oh, and all women are as good as slaves. And there's this one woman who isn't. What do you think? The main character, no opinion, just, oh, if she can do a job, that's fine. And later on in the book, it is a bit more explicit, like saying, hey, this woman is doing this work, and this woman is being a scientist, and this woman is learning how to build steam engines. And this, you know, it's kind of put out there a bit that that's going on, in a way. And then he's just like, oh, yeah, I guess. And other people are like, oh, but you're more progressive because now the other emperor's dead and you're here, you're actually doing more things and there is going to be some changes and you're going to restructure some stuff.
Yeah,
and
but like, we also found out that he is not actually deciding anything, isn't it?
Well, no, he does get a bit more decidery. He does get a bit more proactive. But almost all of the book is him, like, non-proactively, like, I wouldn't just say reacting to stuff, but even his progressiveness isn't him being progressive. It's just like him slightly getting out of the way of other people. And there was another time when he was like, it was like, oh, this person is dancing with this person. And then you're like, oh, and that was, and you go, oh, okay. So it turns out that was the gay lover of that prince or whatever. That lord had a gay lover. And Maya's reaction is just like, oh. And Maya never has to overcome any prejudices in himself. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, there's never a moment when Maya is like, you know, fuck black people or fuck gay people. Like, just like, oh, women are useless. Oh, and then he learns something by overcoming that. He is just in himself a perfectly, like, not a progressive person because he isn't progressing himself at all. He's not recognizing any prejudices himself and overcoming them or anything. He never has to learn those lessons. He just seems to be fine with progress happening despite him, in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just happening to him.
Yeah, the progress is happening around him, and other people have been less progressive or much more conservative, but he's not like, it's like, it's not as if he's not conservative. He's just not anything. It's just a nothingness of a book. Like the whole idea of this, and there are some messages certainly towards the second half where it is like, oh, women should be equal. Like workers shouldn't be mistreated. Black people are actually okay. In this case, goblins standing in for black people, and that's even thing is it's not even like, oh, you're half black, now you have to deal with racism. But like, if you're the emperor, like, how much does racism really affect you compared to the like his servants, you know, who are obviously standing in for, like, again, I don't want to make it about black and white, but obviously some kind of racial idea there. But with fantasy, it's not even like they're not even saying that, oh, there is any racial tension here at all, because they are presented as different species, goblins and elves, and he's a half goblin, half elf.
Yes.
And so you can't even bring in lessons of racialness.
Like, no.
But you can, but it's difficult to bring that in. It's very muddied. So politically, this book is, it's not problematic. It's just like, if you're creating a fantasy world, and this is what so many people say, if you're creating a fantasy world, why not make everyone equal? Or if you're creating a fantasy world, why not make black people and white people equal? Or why not have
exactly
gay
that
people
was actually,
just a thing that is
that
there?
Was actually my point. In the fantasy world, why do you have to bring up all these issues?
Yeah.
You can just avoid them. You can just build a world where you start with none of these problems.
Well, it's not that you can start with none of the problems, but this is the thing that I've talked about before with other fantasy stories. There are some which, like, you know, for all of his faults in terms of his writing women characters and what their roles are in stories, someone like Brandon Sanderson writes some good stories and the women are doing stuff. You know, all of the women, there's a plucky woman and she's a scholar and she's going to go out, and there's other kick-ass women and this one's going to be an assassin and this one, you know, they're all doing stuff. Even if they are, like, there is gender inequality within the stories, there's not gender inequality because a lot of the time he has main female characters, you know, right, that kind of stuff. And what they fight against is it's them fighting against a male-dominated system, if that's part of the story of that particular book. And there's many other fantasy books which that is the thing. It's sort of like, here we have a system, it's a bit fucked up, but these women are going to go and fight for themselves, you know.
Yeah, but why do you always have to have this?
Well, you don't, but that is something that if they are doing that. But in this book, it's like, women are property, and by the end of it, women are still property, but there's like two women in the whole book that have any clue, and they tell the Emperor at the end, hey, it's not great that we're treated as property. We do have brains ourselves. Literally, there's a conversation at the end of the book, which are like, yeah, you know, women can do the intellectual equal of men, you know? And he's like, and all the time through, you're just like, hey, it could be really progressive. But like, in a way, what I'm saying is that there's no point in having a system which is this sexist and this racist and this conservative if it's just so comfortable to be in that.
Yes.
You know, and that's what it is. It's really, really, it's very, very comfortable conservatism in this book, which is just like, yes, it's great. I'm the emperor. This is wish fulfillment. I can get through everything just because everyone else is stupid, and I can get through everyone just by doing bureaucracy right, and I can get through everything just accidentally doing anything. He doesn't have to do anything. Maya is just comfortable. Isn't it? He's a fun character. I mean, I don't hate him or anything, but you just go, you never faced a challenge in this book. Everything is trivial. Like, if the main challenge for three chapters in a row is just where you're going to put your women, and the next challenge is, oh, we got a bridge. Do you think we should build it? I don't know. And that's like another three chapters. Another thing is, oh, who killed my father? Someone will put someone else on it. You know, it never rises to the challenge. You know, and I've talked about the R. Scott Baker Prince of Nothing series, which is totally like misogynistic, totally. But over the course of like the five books that are out so far, you see women fighting from nothing up and up and up and up and up and up. And it kind of goes somewhere. There's a trajectory for people to fight for and against, you know. And in this book, it's like, I guess some people over there are doing something. But it's such a narrow kind of myopic view on this one character who is the emperor, who has all the power and yet feels powerless to do anything until he finds a bit of, you know, he grows his balls a bit and actually does a bit more and takes a bit more control. But you're like, what is the real challenge in a book for someone who is the emperor, who is expected to take charge, who is expected to make proclamations, growing into someone who is taking charge and making proclamations? It's like, that's not an interesting character arc for anyone.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as if, oh, he, and this happens in lots of fantasy, he didn't know he was going to be king, and he was a peasant boy, and he didn't have any experience, and then he's put into the thing, and it takes him a lifetime to become a great king, and he manages to scathe through, and he leads into battles and stuff. At least you can see the arc of someone like, okay, didn't know he was going to be emperor, and then becomes emperor. And in this book, it's set over just like 3 months or something, was like, was the son of the emperor, knew he was going to be emperor, at the very beginning of the book becomes the emperor, and then kind of muddles through for a lot of the book. And I'm just like, that's not a... And again, I don't need my fantasy. I don't want fantasy or stories to always have this arc, of this heroic arc. But it has to be more than just filling out forms. Like that reviewer said, if you've got to fill out your ISO 9001 form, if that's your idea of a good story, this is it. This is great.
What is an ISO?
I don't even know. It's normal bureaucracy. Like, what's the name of the form? You've got your 30920 form, and from you got to get to go to this office.
Yeah.
This bureau to pick up this form and go over there. You know, it's like that bit in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie where you go, and I've got to go in. He's like, I'm going to, for the love of my girlfriend, I'm going to go in and I'm going to fill out these forms. I'm going to fill the fuck out of these forms. And you go, oh, it's like, really good. Very well done.
Now you need to fill out the
other one. You got to go
red form.
Yeah, just imagine that, but not told from the point of view of him, but told from the point of him telling someone to do that for him. They go and do it and then come back and said, filled out the form for you. And he's like, great. And that's the remove from it. So you don't even get the interest of Sevit, his secretary. Like, if this story had been told from Sevit's point of view, it would have been way better, because there was a character who was just a guy who delivered messages and had taught himself how to read and write or whatever. Mm. And he comes in, and when he gets picked up, he's like, messenger boy, can you tell me where to go? Oh, messenger boy, can you do this? Oh, messenger boy. And after a while, it's like, oh, messenger boy, what's your name? Oh, Sevit. Okay, great. Sevit, can you do this? And then there's, oh, Sevit, can you write this down? And he kind of falls into the position of being. And it's like, that was a more interesting. Like, if the same story had been told from these other characters' point of view, it would have been so much better. Anyway, I waffled on long enough about that.
Now let me come to the main funny point about this whole book.
What's the main funny point for you?
I'm waiting for you to do that the whole time. Now, tell me some of the characters' names.
Okay, no, this is somewhat tricky. This is what they said on the Incomparable podcast. One person said, it was a bit tricky to get through like the letter soup of some of the names. I'm paraphrasing what they said. The names are sometimes, there's too many names and they're too similar, and sometimes it's difficult to find out who is who. Remember who is who. And then someone else on the podcast said, oh, I actually listened to it as an audiobook. And they're like, oh, it wouldn't have been so bad for you. It's actually, it was still really bad for me, even as an audiobook. And in the back of my head, I was like, well, I'm definitely going to listen to this as an audiobook. And normally, I don't have a problem with that at all. I don't have a problem with the proper nouns and like different countries and different places and different names for like things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like Alistair Reynolds and Ian Banks, they have
lots of names.
Weird names sometimes too. Yeah.
And I generally don't have a problem with it. Sometimes it takes me a little bit of time to pick up. And sometimes if I stop reading for a while and come back to it, it'll take me like, you know, a few paragraphs or a few chapters to go, okay, oh yes, and it all kind of clicks
into
place.
I always find it difficult when I can't, when I don't have a reading experience in my head of the name.
Okay.
You know, when
you got to read it out loud.
I have to see the name at least once. And once it's there, it's fine.
It's good.
But what if there's no writing about it at all and I kind of don't really get it, it's always like a bit of a mumble.
So I went into this book knowing that the names could be an issue. And it started off and there's a guy called Maya. And I'm like, okay, his name's Maya.
It's fine.
And he's got a brother called Severin, something like that. I'm just going to call him Severin. And I'm like, okay, this isn't too bad. And then someone turns up and this secretary turns up. He's not a secretary yet, but he's not named. And then they go somewhere. Oh, your father has died. And I'm like, okay. And your brother. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, great. Okay, so we've got these three brothers. And then we never meet them. But we do meet Smurf from there. And a guy called Curves. And I was like, oh, that guy has got a C at the front of his name. I'll remember that one because all the rest of them were called Murph and Erskimer and Snurf and Erfimer. And it got to the point. I literally, even all the way to the end of this book, I had no clue at all what was going on with people. And this is one of the main complaints about it. When he was talking about, the reason I'm saying, oh, he had all these women to move around, only when they were talked about in context did I have any clue who they were, because the names were so foreign to me and yet so similar to each other. There was no way to go for it. And I think some of this is by design, that people would have, like, from the same family would have a similar name, but they would have, like, if one was female and one was male. But it got to the point where one of them was called, there was one called Minshnerga Fmerma, and the other one's called Mermfmershismerga. Like, and it's like, or like, there was just, it was just swapping around like one consonant from the other ones. It was like it is called, one person is called Luke Burridge, and the other one person is called Lube Burke. I don't even know. It's like, I can't even come up with names that are this similar to myself. So anyway, I queued it up this afternoon. When I listened to it, and I played it to you, and you couldn't believe what had just... Okay, this is a section. This is right at the end of the book, chapter 17 of 18, and it's talking about what happened to some characters that have been mentioned all the way through the book. And as these characters were read out, I realized I still didn't have any clue what was going on. I'm going to play this directly into the microphone, but hopefully you can hear this.
34. Building bridges.
Here it comes.
The first 2 months of the new year...
Listen to these names.
...in the trials of the Princess Cheveon, Lord Chavar, the Duke Tethamel, Darchos Mayubajar, Mer Shalavar, Mer Brolchanar, Min Narchonajan, and a dizzying host of other persons associated with one or the other of the attempts to remove Edrahasivar the VII from the throne.
Oh, by the way, Edrahasivar the VII is Maya, because when he goes into the thing, he gets...
He also have a name.
Yeah, but and then they're talking about, oh, and your aunt's from Nurse and Merthimer. And when I'm coming up with the fake names for this book and saying Merce and Merthimer and Nurse and Merthimer are two different people, but one of them's called Merce and Merthimer and the other one's called Nurse and Merthimer. Like, it sounds like I'm just making the... That's what I was hearing when it was saying to me. And I'm sure if I was reading this book, I would actually be able to recognize the difference between Nurse and Merthimer and Merce and Merthimer. But because one of them starts with an N and one of them starts with an M... Merce and Erfiner and Nurse and Merfimer. But like, when it's just said that and someone, and like, so all the way through this book, they'll be like, oh, what about Niska Merfimer? And I'm like, I can't remember who Niska Merfimer is. Is it? I remember there was other people called Niska Merfimer, and there was another one that was called Tiska Merfimer, and another one called Kifska Merfimer. But I'm sure that in the head of the author, she had all of these naming schemes worked out. Oh, if it ends with Nurse Merfimer, or if it ends with Mum, it means this thing. But because there's lots of other people at that point in that political strata, they're all called Merskimurfinum, or Terskimurfinum, or Kerskimurfinum, and they come from different places. At one point, they've got these kids that they've got to go, oh, well, we've got to do something with these kids. I know, let's leave it with Prince. Let's leave these kids with Prince Skumiskumum. And I'm like, I don't know who that. And they're going, oh, Prince Skumiskumum is a very good way. And I'm like, I don't remember any. Like, I don't. Who is that person? And there's loads of women. It's like, oh, and then Countess Merskumum. But and also, I think sometimes you would be able to say, like, okay, if you just call it Count, I know how important they are. Or Prince, I know how important they are. And this brings me back to a bit of the Curse of Caelion, where they're not knights, they're castellars. And they're the different layers of... that wasn't too bad, because some of them are just called lords, and some of them called kings. But here, the top level is... the emperor, and then you get princes, and then from there on down, fuck if I know. I just don't know anything. Like, all of the different layers, I never knew how important everyone was. Because then, instead of being called Count this or Earl this, and then, you know, below that is a lord, and then below that is a knight, and below that is something, it was just, it was you know, whatever it comes down, a magistrate, and then a mayor of a city, and then a counselor. I don't even know how but you could come up with different levels that are just words that we would recognize, and then give them a name of where they're from. But then even the places that they're from, like if you were to look on the map, it would be like next to Skumulumnum, there would be a place called Skumulumnum, and then next to that would be a place called Fumulumnum, and then behind that would be a Punumnum. And I'm like, I can't remember, were you from Skumulumnum, Fumulumnum, or Punumnum? And then you were saying, oh no, actually are they a country or a city? No way to know. There's just no way to know if it's okay. And then they have a palace, and the palace is called the palace of was built back in the day by Skumen Fluminum and and there's different places in this palace, and there's different levels of government, and they meet in different parts of the palace. I literally had no idea ever where I was in the building, except for one room, which is called the Turtle Room. And I'm like, I know where that is! And every time, and this was his place where he felt most safe, because it was his first room, and he was like, oh, I didn't meet them in the hall. I met them in the Turtle Room. And I was like, yes, we're back in the Turtle Room. I don't know what it looks like. I know it's kind of smaller, and it's less intimidating for him, and it's like a more personal space. But the Turtle Room, and I was like, why isn't everything just called that? Like, why don't they name it like the Dragon Palace? And over there is a land called, you know, Sandy Land. And you realize, oh, this is the genius of so many of these. Like we're Tolkien. It's like, where are you from? I'm from the scary woods. Are you? I go over the dusty mountains. Oh, there was the ones right there. And I come from this. And you realize that, like, the genius of Tolkien is that he could come up with naming schemes which didn't only sound, like, real and had history to them, but had history in a way that was identifiable to where we couldn't do. And even greater genius, you get to the end of the Lord of the Rings, you start reading the appendix. It's like, oh, and actually the person that we're calling Merry all the way through, his name was actually Skufslanushkum, but I've changed, this has been translated from the original of nothing, like this is fake appendix, but it's been translated, and Frodo Baggins wasn't called Frodo Baggins, he was actually called Skufslanushkum, but we've translated it into this. I was like, yes, even if in your head, even to make the world as lived in as possible, you have to have these names of these roots and different things. Just give them nicknames. Just make them nice to read about and easy to read about. Because fuck me, I don't know the difference between Lord Smerskimerpimer and Lord Smerskisnefimer. I understand that there's two different names there, but I don't know. And I just played that until you... And there's other parts of the book where they just list off some names. What should we do with Skimminimminim and Meskinimimpenim? It's like, oh, that had a P in it. Oh, okay. Next time I hear something that sounds like Snerskimminimminim, but it has a P in it, I know it's talking about this. And then, like, 5 minutes later, they list some other names. I was like, I can't remember. Was it Skirfin? Did it have a P in it? I don't even know. It went by way too quickly. This whole book is a fucking disaster of proper nouns. Like, it's just proper. It's like someone has got all these names and just put them in a bowl and just go, okay, we're going to throw a grenade in here, and then we're all going to duck, and all these names are going to be splattered around the walls, and then they're going to dribble down over each other, and as they dribble down over each other, I'm then going to pick them out at random to assign them to different characters, maybe. I don't know. It's just a complete and utter disaster in terms of naming. So, this book started out great. The names got annoying very quickly. The lack of plot, like, individual subplots are okay, and the individual characters are okay, but it's told from the wrong point of view with weird, wishy-washy politics in a way which makes me just think, what's the point of this book? Like, who is this book for? Like, if this was a book that is for kids, because it feels very much like, oh, a coming-of-age story kind of thing.
Yeah.
If it's a book for kids, first of all, they're never going to keep all these names straight. And it's not as if there's only a few names. There's just loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of characters. You know that when we were talking in the last episode about Slow Bullets by Alistair Reynolds, and you're like,
yeah,
surely there'd be more crew members. I was like, yeah, but it's a short story. So this character is representative of all of those different characters. Imagine that book where there's a guy called Prad. Prad was his name?
Prad, yeah, Prad.
See, I remember that, but yeah. And I read that weeks ago. Prad. And but there's not just Prad. There's like 40 other technicians.
And Prad and Pad.
There's
and
Prad
sad
and Pad and Sad and Prad. You know, the funny thing is in Tolkien is that actually sometimes his names are a bit confusing.
With, like with the dwarves.
Yeah, with the dwarves. You've got Jolly and Volley and Bolly and Giri and Siri and Tiri. Actually, I don't remember all the names, but they're all similar. But the joke is it doesn't matter who they are because, you know, in the movie they were like, okay, does he have facial hair? Yes. Does he have a beard? Yes. Does he have a moustache and a beard or just a beard? Is he
is
fat?
He big
does
or
he
not?
Wear a thing? Yeah. Like, it didn't actually matter what any of those were doing except for like the three main dwarves because you had the main guy, you had the one that fell in love with the dwarf, with the elf, and like one other guy who dies at the end. You're like, okay, it doesn't matter about the others. They're just roly-poly dwarves who bounce off things and, you know, and get chased by elves and
other things
and goblinses and things like that. And it doesn't matter. But just imagine reading The Lord of the Rings where one is called, you know, you got Sauron and Saruman, and you're like, ah, their names sound similar. They're a bit confusing. Oh, it turns out one of them's bad. Ah, like this, you know. But then just imagine if every other bad guy is called Saruman, and then Saruwan, and then Sanuman, and then Asoran, and then like every name in the whole book is just that. And then you got Arwen, and then Eowyn, and then all the other females are called variations of Arwen, Eowyn, Ereren, Anowyn, Wyanowyn. You know, that's what we have here. It's just awful.
It's so funny.
It's not funny. It's just me making nonsense noises for the last 15 minutes of this review.
Hilarious.
It's not. It's stupid. It's just so disappointing.
I'm having fun here.
I wanted to move on from this. Anyway, here's to say, yeah, okay, this is my point, is that if this book is a kid's book because it's like a coming-of-age story, it's really boring because it's just all about bureaucracy. Even though, oh, my phone is making noises. Even though it's really, like, the character is nice, like, Maya is nice. Like, do you want to have a, like, we're talking about just to bring the tone down a bit, we had this conversation the other day. Was it in the last episode about religion and stuff? Anyway,
yes, but about the holy book.
Yeah, about the holy books. Okay, forget all of that. But so there was this kid who went into a church, a black church in South Carolina, and killed lots of people. And you're like, okay, that's really bad. And then my nieces said to my sister, what's a black church? And she's like, oh, a black church is where, you know, black people get together to worship God. And they're like, why do people have to, like, why do black people get together separate from white people? Shouldn't everyone just love God? And you're like, yeah, it turns out you've got to teach kids racism because, like, these kids are just brought up in a family. They've got, you know, in the area that they live, they've got, like, in the north of London, they've got lots of black friends. There's black people in their church, you know. For them, it's not even a thing that black people would be different.
Racism isn't something you get born with.
No, and sexism as well. It's like, oh, women... You mean women aren't equal? You know, like, it has to be shared. So, like, if you're reading this book, it starts off with a basis of, yeah, black people eat children. I mean, okay, goblins eat, again, it's that kind of thing. You know, elves are good, goblins are bad, white people are nice, and black people are scary. Women are property. You know, poor people are idiots. Emperors are the great. Rich people have it all. And workers should die in factories. Okay, that's what we're starting off as. And at the end of this book, they fight to the point where in the future, maybe some of that might change if the main character decides to put his mind to it and change it in the future at some point. I'm like, if this is a book for kids, why are you even starting off at that point?
Right.
If it's just made up and it isn't saying anything about the modern world. Unlike other fantasy, which is going, okay, we are telling it. This is an analog of medieval life, and we're going to show how bad it is. But this isn't even, it doesn't even feel like that, if you know what I mean. So even if it is for kids, why are you starting off kids in where the baseline of the book is that the only person telling stories about is the most privileged people in society? Women are nothing. Black people are evil.
This reminds me a bit of what we watched yesterday, Paddington the Bear.
Yeah, Paddington
and this is totally a story where they took in the movie.
Yeah.
Obviously teaching a lesson that just
to be inclusive.
To be inclusive. Just take it. It doesn't matter if he's a bear.
Yeah,
he's just a kid.
Yeah, it was kind of a bit too heavy-handed.
Face,
yeah,
but
it was a bit heavy-handed and like, yay, people from abroad. We should just bring them into Britain.
Darkest Peru.
Yeah, he's from Darkest Peru. Let's just bring. Well, that's from the book. But the whole idea was like, yeah, Paddington Bear is it. In the end, it didn't matter that he was just a bear. It's just like, and at the end, it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, London is so great because everyone is so different that everyone fits in. Like, everyone, yeah. Like, I'm different from everyone, but in London, everyone's different from everyone. And so we all fit in together. I'm like, oh, that's so nice.
But that
like,
is a message.
Yeah. Even though everyone in the movie is white, except the band that's playing, you know, like, it's a very British movie in that
totally.
Way. But, like, there could have been some more immigrant characters.
Yes.
But then there was the owner of the antique shop who was very much like, oh, I came over from Czechoslovakia, or whatever it was, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, and the bear is treated like as some...
But it's a bear who speaks with an English accent. So again, they bypass a lot of that. But in the end, the message is like, oh, okay, this is good.
It doesn't matter how you look like. It doesn't matter where you come from.
Yeah. You can kind of feel that it's starting in a fun way. But this book, it just didn't even have that. Anyway, we got
so no
way
message.
Longer. It does have a message. It's like, the message is, oh, I guess women have brains. And the message is, oh, yeah, black people probably aren't scary and eat children. And the message is, oh, well, poor people probably shouldn't be dying in factories, right? Maybe? You know, and that kind of message just isn't one that I can get on board with, because it's like it's so self-evidently true that women shouldn't be treated as they are in this book. That why is it a code? Oh, and I forgot to even mention, I said two hours before the end of the audiobook, I was like, what else can happen here?
Did something?
Nothing. No. And then an hour after the book, they've even got everyone in jail. Everything is wrapped up. They're literally saying nothing is else to do. Like, that point. And I'm like, and I said to you this, what's the last 50 minutes of this book? What's going to happen? What could possibly happen? Nothing. He just has conversations with people and they come to him and say, oh, thanks for not being a complete cunt. And he's like, oh, my pleasure. And someone else comes to him and says, oh, you know, women have brains too. He's like, yeah. And she's like, wow, you're not reacting angrily for me saying that women have brains? And he's like, well, I guess. And so, you know.
Is that the way he's talking?
That's his attitude. It's like, yeah, I guess. Like, I guess I'm not a complete bastard like my father was, right? And I guess that's good. Like, he doesn't even have any conviction to go, I'm going to. Maybe at some point he is like, I want to be the best emperor ever. Maybe there's glimpses of that.
Maybe this will be a series and he will become...
There's nothing to happen. Everything's finished in the story and it finished 2 hours before the end of the book. There's nothing more to go. What are we going to do about it? I don't mind if the story is like, those people in the factories to the north who go blind working on the embroidery stuff. Let's sort them out. These people over here, we're going to build a bridge between these two communities and hopefully it will equal some stuff out. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's going to be great too. But we don't need to have anything else from the point of view of the emperor. Nothing. There's nothing there. There was never anything there.
All right.
It's really annoying that we have to read this whole book from his point of view. At the start, I thought, oh, he's going to have some struggles. He's going to do stuff. And then I'm like, wow, it really is him. He's just filling out forms. But it's not even him filling out forms. It's him asking people. It's him asking other people to fill out forms. That's what this whole book is about. Someone who literally says, "I don't have any power to do anything except to ask other people to do work for me, and I hope they do a good job. I hope they don't fuck up." And then they come back and we're like, "We didn't fuck up." And he's like, "Well done." And then other people come back and I kind of fucked up a bit. And he's like, "Okay, well, I forgive you." And always, and he's so good. His heart is so good. He's like, oh, all these people tried to kill me, but I want to forgive them, but they have to die. They're going to, but we have to put them to, but I want to forgive everyone.
You can't see what Luke is doing here. He's like rubbing his heart.
My heart is bleeding for these people who tried to kill me and did kill all my fathers. And of course, there are some consequences. But anyway, that's it. What I do want to say, though, after all of that, you think I've ragged on everything. Like I say, there was some good stuff at the beginning of this book. What was absolutely fantastic, though, was the audiobook narrator. Kyle McCarley did a really good job bringing this book to life. Because sometimes the only way I knew which character it was is because I recognized their voice.
The voice.
And that's the thing. Every character who had a voice, I knew who they were, not because of the names, but because of the voice. The problem is a lot of characters are just off screen. Like there's these
people. They don't speak.
They don't speak. Yeah. They're just being referred to. Other people are having conversations about Lord Fnafnafnafnaf and Skirskamerfnaf and Fairfnafnaf and Merfnafnaf. And there's no way for me to know them apart. But when there was voices, different voices, and there was change of voice, I was like, who's this guy come to see him again? And then the voice would kick in. I was like, I know who this person is. I have confidence that I'm not just leaving, I'm being left behind in the story. So I just want to say, Kyle McCarley, really good job there, because that was the only way I could stay connected to a lot of these characters.
Cool.
Very good voices from Carl McCarley. There was kind of like a... Like in his general reading, there was kind of a little bit of a snobbishness to it, a bit of like an off-putting, you know, distance, like a bit of sneering, like a bit of a sneer to his voice all the way through. But it kind of worked with the characters, like that kind of like, oh, we're in the court. Well, of course, and you know, in some of the ways that he was saying, I mean, I can't do an impression of somebody doing that, but that was very good. And I would say, because this is, I'm talking about the audiobook, you should go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and get a free trial. You get a free audiobook. I would recommend this book if you want 16 hours and 25 minutes of the most milquetoast nothingness of a story. And blah, blah, blah. But I would say this, go on to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, Area X. Go Jeff Vandermeer Area X. It's the Southern Reach trilogy, and I listened to the first one of them. That's the one that actually did win the Nebula Award, and it was actually three stories, like three shortish novels released in 1 year, all in 2014, and they are combined together into a single collection. So for one Audible credit, all for free, by going to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, search for Jeff Vandermeer Area X. It's the Southern Reach trilogy, all three stories that were released here. They were released individually as three novels, but you can get them all for one credit on Audible. And some fantastic narration there as well. Caroline McCormack, view book details, what is it? And Bronson Pinchot and Z Sands. I've only read the first one, but Bronson Pinchot is very, very good audiobook narrator. So I do suggest them ones if you want a free book, and that way you can also support me and my reading habits and Juliana's by and the hosting and all that kind of stuff for the SFBRP. Audible swings a few dollars our way for each person who signs up using the SFBRP offer code at audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Anything else you want to say, Julian, about this book? I would give it a rating of, I was going to say 2 stars. I think 2 stars is okay.
2 stars, not one.
No, well, no, the thing is, when it started off, I was like, oh, this is definitely a 4-star book. And then as it carried on, I'm like, 3 stars. And then it came out, 2.5 stars. And by the end, I was like, holy fuck, 2 stars. Like, it's not a bad book. It's just not for me. And by the end of it, it was really frustrating. However good the first third of it was, it didn't keep up. And which is weird, because as I was just flicking through some Goodreads reviews there, other people said, oh, it really picked up in the second half. I'm like, were we reading the same book? Like, nothing was, like, how can it be at the end of fantasy books that all of the end of the fantasy book is just like, hey, and you get this title, and you get this award, and you get married, and it's just like, why is it?
And getting married is an award.
Like, why is it at the end of every fantasy book we have to read, like, another 3 chapters of what people get? Like, what people are awarded with. And it happens the same here as well. It's like, I don't want to listen to another hour of an audiobook being, and then this person came towards the Emperor and they had this conversation. And they said, oh,
it's
well
like,
done.
It's like in Star Wars.
No, Star Wars is like a 2-minute scene, like even less than that, of them just getting medals. It's like, fucking move on. At the end of the other one, it's like, oh, we have a party and he burns his father. On the, you know, it's the opposite of that. The whole point of that is that they get medals and they just move on. But it's not that they're... When the next movie starts, it's not like, and they all live happily ever after. No, they're still like fighting the Empire. Mm. You start off on Hoth again. Mm.
You wanted to wrap it up.
I am wrapping it up. I have finished. I asked you if you wanted to say anything else.
But then you didn't answer. Let me answer.
Okay, what do you want to say?
Don't really have anything to say.
Yeah, that's what you said. You shook your head when I said, do you have anything else to say before? You shook your head. That's why I carried on. Okay, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Bird. You can follow Juliana on Twitter. She is at, what is it?
Yuku Berlin.
Yeah. J-U-K-U Berlin.
Yeah.
Okay. Julia Kunzendorf Berlin. You can become our friends on goodreads.com. That's the best way to do it, actually. This is what we do. We go along. Friends reviews on goodreads.com. Jenny rated it 4 stars. Tom rated it 4 stars. Terp Christian 4 stars.
So maybe Mike, it is not that bad overall.
It's just not for me. It's not badly written. There is no sentence in this book where I was like, oof, that was a clumsy sentence. No, it's perfectly, like, the sentence by sentence, it's fine. You know, chapter by chapter, it's fine. But just, like, overall, it's just nothing for me. But loads of 5 stars. Victoria, Vic Zed rated it 1 star. But yeah, so... SFBRP listeners on average give it 4.07, so like 4-star
pretty
book.
Good.
I thought that's what it would be for me too. Average community reviews, no, I did a weird sorting thing there where I sorted out some bad reviews. Anyway, it doesn't matter too much. But yeah, generally well received. Nominated for Hugo and the Nebula. For me, a 2-star book, if that. Okay, that's it for me. Oh yeah, and join in. Next up, probably, I forgot I didn't get around to reviewing the Dying Earth saga. I will get onto Dying Earth by Jack Vance. Juliana will finish up a book at the same time as me at some point, and we'll get onto some books there as well. We've got 2 books on the go that we'll get to and finish up soon. And of course, The Southern Reach. I will read the next 2 books in that series. Listen to them. I've been waiting like for 8 months now for them to come out in Germany as an audiobook, and they have. So I'm looking forward to that too. So that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.